everybody, welcome to another Mama Making Movie podcast. As always, joined by David Goggin and Fergus Finley O'Donnell. So today we'll have more trailer breakdowns, followed by the career best and worst of Eddie Murphy. Then we'll look at movies we picked for each other last week. We'll have some picks for next week, and we've also got some mini reviews of a couple of new movies out that we flagged on our trailer breakdowns before. So that's what we'll be doing today. Guys, who wants to jump out one of their trailers first? Anyone have anything urgent to say?
I'll just go first, if you don't mind.
I do.
Oh, fair enough.
Oh, well, he's urgent anyway.
Yes, Butler, come on, we've been through this. I am urgent.
Slow and steady wins the podcast award, Calvin.
No, it's just, look, it's fresh on the mind. As I said, I only really kind of picked this before we went on air, so I don't mind going ahead if that's all right with yourselves.
Rock and roll.
Fantastic. So I've picked the movie called The Courier, starring Benedict Cumberbatch, due for release March 19th this year. It does have a score on Rotten Tomatoes of 82%, which I feel is good, and I'm still in the movie draft kind of opinion at the moment, so obviously I was going to pick a good score. A quick synopsis: the true story of a British businessman unwittingly recruited into one of the greatest international conflicts in history, forming an unlikely partnership with a Soviet officer hoping to prevent a nuclear confrontation. The two men work together to provide the crucial intelligence used to defuse the Cuban Missile Crisis.
Sounds like work.
No, tell them I'm in my chair.
Yes, he's just walked in.
This is unexpected. I can't believe I'm actually having lunch with spies. I'm just a salesman.
Exactly. You're a civilian, so the KGB won't be watching.
It would be a real service to Great Britain.
What would you want me to do?
Don't know if you've got to see the trailer. It doesn't give too much away, but part of me is thinking, is there too much to give away as well? Like, is this going to be it? Like, is it going to step up a gear compared to the trailer? Yeah. I don't think so. Obviously, as I said, reading into that 82% on Rotten Tomatoes, maybe it does. Maybe it does get better. I didn't really like the trailer. I just thought it was too slow. And I feel like nothing is going to happen in this movie. I've kind of gone off Benedict Cumberbatch lately as well.
Really? Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. It's
you're not a Cumber bitch.
I'm not a Cumber bitch. No.
Cumber bitch.
Like, I don't know where I went, where he's gone wrong for myself, but I don't think he was the right person for this.
Yeah. I mean,
like, he was in that one, the World War II movie where he was part of the team that broke the Germans' code.
Invitation game.
So. Yeah. And I thought he was great in that. And maybe that's why they picked him for this, but. Yeah.
Well, he does like that kind of, like, he has that accent and he does have the kind of old style look about him, I suppose. I think that's why they kind of pick him for these kind of, like, there's certain people that look good in period piece films and TV shows, and there's certain people who just don't have the look for it. And it doesn't matter if you dress them up in a certain way, they kind of look out of place. And he seems to have that kind of face and kind of look and demeanor and everything for it.
Yeah,
I mean, I'm a big Beetlejuice Captain Crunch fan. Benadryl Cumber bitch, but I mean, like, yeah, the trailer looked a bit. Yeah. I don't know. Did it look a bit slapstick? Like it was trying to be kind of funny in a way, and it was like, I don't know how serious this is supposed to be, but there's a lot of kind of like they make him really kind of Mr. Beanish or something.
They make him like civilian, like I suppose. Yeah, he's not a spy himself, you know. So he shouldn't have that training. Maybe that's what they were trying to kind of portray in the trailer. That yeah, he's just a normal human being. One of the points I did have down here is the runtime is 1 hour and 50 minutes, which I think is perfect for a movie, and I think
we'll get back to that.
If they have, yeah, spoiler. if they have a good story to tell and they can tell it well, that's enough time to tell it in. But overall, I don't really see how it could get such a high rating.
Really, yeah.
Hmm.
I caught the trailer a couple of weeks ago, and yeah, it didn't really wow me either. The woman from The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel's in it, Rachel Brosnahan, and she's great. That's the only thing that kind of caught my eye, because I don't think she's in many movies just yet, because her career is kind of on the trajectory at the minute. But yeah, Bendick, he's one of those guys, he's kind of like Kyle Chandler and John Hamm, where like they've come from TV, and for every like one good movie they do, there seems to be like a few clangers.
Yeah.
So they just kind of seem to want to just get themselves on that kind of movie level grounding and then just kind of go from there. But yeah, I don't like thinking about Cold War movies. I don't know off the top of the head, can you name many good ones? Because it's the ultimate cock tease of a war, you know, there's that much stuff happened during that Cold War. So like, I mean, yeah, there's spies and things like that, but I mean, yeah, there's not really jumps out at me that kind of like Cold War wise.
I haven't seen it, but when, what is Tinker Tailor Soldier Boy? When is that set?
I don't know myself.
The Cold War is Bridge of Spies. Cold War,
Bridge of Spies is the Cold War. I think I really don't like movies about like Russians.
Wow. Well, that just
lost all the Russian,
Russian market.
It's not a big country. A star is born.
Well, the Americans will love us.
Yeah. Yes. Pull that, like, I mean, like we were talking about the thing when we were talking about the Jack Ryan TV show off air and how like cartel has been done to death. The same goes for the Soviet Union and things like that. It's been done to death, and it's very hard to kind of get fresh eyes on it at this stage, I think. But yeah, Gogan, would you have a score? Obviously, sorry, you've seen the score already, but
yeah, I don't think I'd agree with the score. But just purely based off the trailer, and I suppose that's all I can go off.
Will you watch?
It's a good question, because like yourselves, I'm not massive on the Cold War movies. They don't jump out at me, and I just don't think they're exciting enough for me to sit down and watch. However, though, it does get a good score. So, you know, I think if I had to sit down and watch this, I would. But going off the trailer, I'm in the 65% range.
And I presume since it's out next month, it's a streaming service of sorts, is it?
Well, according to this, it says, still says cinema day release. Nothing mentioned on the streaming service, but...
Interesting. Might go to that video on demand, maybe.
Yeah.
I think there might be... I think I saw something about it. I think most are doing both, because there is obviously places where the cinemas are still open. But like obviously not as much as they'd want them to be, so they're releasing them on both to obviously make as much money as they can. I would say, Gogan, personal 65 maybe. Critics wise, yeah, obviously they like it, so
yeah, it's doing something for them. Buller, do you have any score that you might give it?
Just off the trailer, I mean, 60s as well. Yeah. I love Sherlock, so I like Benedict Cumberbatch. But I don't know if I'll ever get around to watching this.
Yeah, no, that's a valid point. Did you have a trailer for us this week, Buller, I presume?
I do. I picked this not because I liked it, but just because it's a big movie coming out. It's King Kong v. Godzilla. quick synopsis for anyone who doesn't know the story of King Kong and Godzilla. So legends collide in Godzilla vs. Kong as the mythic adversaries meet in a spectacular battle for the ages. With the fate of the world hanging in the balance, Kong and his protectors undertake a perilous journey to find his true home. And with this, them is Jaya, a young orphaned girl with whom he has formed unique and powerful bonds. But they unexpectedly find themselves in the path of the enraged Godzilla, cutting a swath of destruction across the world. The epic clash between the two titans, instigated by unseen forces, is only the beginning of a mystery that lies deep within the core of the earth. Starring Alexander Skarsgård, Kyle Chandler, Millie Bobby Brown, Rebecca Hall. It's coming out the end of March on HBO Max. I don't spend too much time on this because, as we were saying, folks, anyone, this is a breaking news for anyone listening. We're hopefully doing a massive movie monster special with the release of this to watch it next month, so I won't spend too much time going into like the likes and the don't likes of the previous Godzilla and King Kong movies. But you know, I've loved Peter Jackson one. Actually, I don't mind the Matthew Broderick one. I think it's a funny enough watch. I hated the Godzilla that came out in 2014 or whatever, did with Bryan Cranston. Walked out of the cinema. That was awful. Haven't seen the other one. Don't want to really watch this one, but I'll watch it as a novelty. Kong Skull Island wasn't good either. This is looks CGI.
Just going to show this. Crap, full of crap.
Waste of my time. And also, look, again, we'll talk about this a different time. But, like, I mean, I don't know how to make this competitive. Godzilla breeds, like, fucking blue, you know, radiation or something. I don't know. Like, it seems fairly cut and dry is going to win there, but we'll see. We'll see. Taking bets. March 31st. Godzilla v. Kong.
We need Kong. The world needs him. To stop what's coming. And this child. She's the only one he'll communicate with.
I knew that they had a bond. She had nowhere to go, so I made a promise to protect her. And I think that in some way, Kong did the same.
I think the trailer looks so over the top. You know, it's got the music and they're...
It's Godzilla versus King Kong, for fuck's sake.
Yeah.
I know, but I thought they could have done a bit more subtle, you know, like There Will Be Blood or something, you know, like a slow pace.
It just
slow burn.
Oh, there's King Kong drilling for oil and he awakens Godzilla or something and they have...
What's he doing? What is he doing?
You smash my building! I think, yeah, I watched this trailer as well. I laughed when I saw, like, a certain part of it. Because you know what annoys me about these types of films is that, like, I think these are really hard to get wrong. Like, I mean, just give us enough substance so, you know, the plot and the, like, the characters around the monsters aren't convoluted and shite. And don't focus too much on the people. And then make the monster fight really cool. That's all you need to do. But they seem to have fucked it up many, many times. The first one with Bryan Cranston and the second one with Millie Bobby Brown, which is the last one, they're in the same one. So that's technically the second one, and this is technically the third one. Which I didn't know. I thought they were completely separate films until I looked at the Godzilla and I was like, oh, it's the exact same Godzilla. I thought it was like another reboot.
It's the same King Kong from the...
From Skull Island.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is more just... CGI'd to death as well. Like, I mean,
I think you need a bit of CGI here. Like,
but I thought that the King Kong from 2005 looked better than the King Kong in what was that, 2017, 18?
Yeah.
Somehow, like, I was watching King Kong 2005, and my dad came in and he was like, "Jesus, that monkey looks real, doesn't he?"
Ah, Ferguson, a bomb shelter.
Yeah. Is that the news?
I mean, you know, Jurassic Park's animatronics or whatever puppetry is still, I think, better than 80% of CGI I've seen.
So, would you say they got Jurassic Park wrong as well?
Huh?
Don't get me wrong. I liked the
first one.
The first remake I thought was good.
Oh, the remakes. Yeah, the remakes are shocking.
Sorry, the remakes. Yeah, no.
Oh, they're garbage. Look, it's a hard idea to kind of do over and over again. People go to an island, something goes wrong. And then the second one, the whatever it's called, Fallen Kingdom or something, was an absolute pile of shite. So like they're crap now.
I always prefer practical effects, and I said this before, but I suppose with something on a scale of like monsters that are as big as buildings. I mean, like, in the difference between Peter Jackson's King Kong and this King Kong, Peter Jackson King Kong is like 25 foot, I wanna say. Like, I mean, he's tall, but he's big. Yeah. But he's not like bigger than the fucking buildings in New York. You know what I mean? He has to climb the Chrysler building. But this one's like as big as Godzilla. He's that big. And it's like, I don't know. And like, as you said, like, he breathes fire. And then like, it seems to go into this convoluted plot line of Kong's species being actually way more intelligent than they are, that they can use fucking weapons, as in like somehow they have a magic spear that, by the looks of it, is able to harness Godzilla's breath. I mean, why? This is the thing, like, this is why I think it's going to be absolute shite. And, like, if you look at the first one with Bryan Cranston and then the second one, the first one, you barely saw Godzilla. The second one, it was Godzilla overload.
Well, my question is as well, and we're probably getting too far off the trailer itself because we're ruining all of our good stuff for the actual monster special, but wasn't Godzilla the good guy in the Bryan Cranston movie?
I think you're right there. And I do, yeah. I can see a scenario here where Godzilla and King Kong have to team up to defeat some sort of other monster, whether it's the Mothra or something that the humans have made, because man is the most dangerous species of all. Yeah. So you can see them teaming up or something to fight something else.
Yeah.
It was a spoiler thing that someone, it was either in the last film or it was like, I think it might have been the last film that there was like a flash of it. And I think it's Mecha Godzilla that they're going to have to fight, as in like a robot Godzilla.
Godzilla goes to Mecha?
Yes. He finds inner peace. But it's like Mecha Godzilla.
Godzilla X.
It's basically, yeah, it's basically a X versus Godzilla. They made like a basically a robot version of Godzilla to obviously fight Godzilla, and then somehow it goes rogue. So. I mean, that happened in the, like, there's like 40 fucking Godzilla movies from like the first one went on, like, it's crazy. There's even like Son of Godzilla and everything. Like, I can't wait to do the movie special because they're hilarious. It's just a guy in a suit.
Oh yeah, I can't wait to pick the ball into them. Predicted score, I think it's gonna be like 58 or something on Rotten Tomatoes, but I'm gonna give it like a 30 predicted score of like 30% because I think this looks like a big pile of shit, to be honest. Ooh. But I'll watch.
I'm looking forward to it. Like, I just think maybe because everyone's in lockdown, that I actually think this movie's been given, like, this trailer has kind of been given a bit more thought, and people seem generally interested about it. Again, that could just be because we're all bored of our bins at home.
We'll move on to your what trailer do you have for us this
week? You know, this is pretty kind of revealing for. It's the big reveal that was going to happen earlier, like later on. But I picked Coming to America 2 because I thought, you know, the night that's in it. Because our actor of the week is, of course, none other than Mr. Eddie Murphy.
Arsenio Hall,
yeah. The life and career of the guy who played Eddie Murphy's dad in the film. I picked Coming to America 2, obviously, because we're doing Mr. Edward Murphy later on. I just found out, like, first of all, I love the first one. And I just found out that, number one, Gogan hates the first one.
I didn't say hey.
I heard hate, Gogan. I heard the venom in your voice. But Butler's never seen it. So look, you know, if no one's ever seen Coming to America, I'll give you a quick synopsis of that. An extremely pampered African prince travels to Queens, New York, and goes undercover to find a wife that he can respect for her intelligence and will. And basically, they've made a second one. The second one is essentially just a follow-up. And Eddie Murphy, without ruining the first one, he, you know, finds a girl, goes back to his African country, and they have kids. He has all daughters, and a girl can't become king of... I can't remember the fictional name of the African country, but they actually reference Black Panther in the new trailer, which is funny. But he finds out that he has an illegitimate son in New York, so he has to go back to America and find his son to become his heir.
Just discovered that I may have a son here in this land.
How much child support is she getting from?
The king pays no child support.
No child support for 30 years and you came back? You was a dummy!
Presenting King Akeem's son from America.
And my mom's.
And his mom's.
Children, this is your brother.
Hey, Quake. I'm sorry I slept with your man.
This happened before we even met.
It's not like you're the first man I've ever been with.
What did you just say about the other man?
Coming to America, now it's coming to me.
I loved the first one. The first one is like pure 80s cheese. I love it. It's not Eddie Murphy as you know him, obviously, because he's playing this kind of, you know, he does like an African kind of accent in it. And but it links up with like another film that we love, which is Trading Places. The old rich chaps in Trading Places appear in it. But I don't know, I loved the first one. Like, I thought the first one was hilarious. But you haven't seen it, but there's like the girl that he ends up finding She, her dad owns like a ripoff of McDonald's called McDowell's. And like when he shows up, he's like, "Dad, there's someone here to see you. Is it McDonald's? Tell him I'm not here." But he just completely like tuck them and just like change everything slightly. He's still like, he's like, "McDonald has the golden arches. We've got the yellow M's." Like, just like changes everything ever so slightly. Like, but
I did want to see it. I've seen The Golden Child, if that counts.
The Golden Child's brilliant. I will get back to The Golden Child. I think I love The Golden Child. But look, the second one, I'd say there's going to be a couple of laughs in the second one. That's all I can say for it. I think it's going to be shite. I think it's something that didn't need a sequel. I think that the film was like, you know, I think it's not an Oscar-worthy film. It's like, you know, a film that you're like, ah, this was fun. It's funny. It's like, I love the 80s and it's very, very 80s. Like, it's all 80s technology, 80s clothes, all that kind of stuff. And the new one is just like, you know what it reminds you of, Buller? It reminds you of Bad Santa 2, where they took a film that was funny and good and then they gave it the treatment of the modern era and put in like shitty dance music and tried to appeal to too many pop culture references. And it seems like they're doing it with this, and it looks horrible. The good thing about it is that they kept the original cast. So Eddie Murphy, Arsenio Hall, what's your man's name? James Earl Jones, he's back in it again. And the guy who, Mr. McDowell, who owns McDonald's, is back. And the same wife. There's loads of characters they brought back. So which I do like about it. And I do think there's going to be the odd laugh in it. But the stuff to do with his son just looks like, God, they made him the epitome of like a modern, I don't know, youth. Like, I mean, that makes me sound really old, but like someone even like us in our 20s, like, and they just made him like, it's so pop culture. And it looks like it's going to be terrible. I think it's going to get absolutely slated. It's coming out this time next month on Amazon Prime. But I just think it's going to be shite.
I actually, maybe because I haven't seen the first one, but I watched the trailer and like, I wasn't size-splittingly hilarious or anything, but I thought there's enough in there that maybe you might get a semi-decent critic scoring. Before we move on to Eddie O'Murphy, do you have a predicted score for Come to America 2?
I would say, I think it's going to suffer, as I said, from sequelitis, and I think it's going to get about a 35 to 40.
Interesting. Go.
I'm torn on this one because I've seen some dodgy sequels. I even seen the Bad Boys 2 or Bad Boys 3 quite recently, and that wasn't the best. This one, I'm kind of torn because I said they got most of the cast back, which is a good sign. I like the idea about, obviously, he has a long lost son back in America, so that makes sense why he's back there. But then I agree with Fergus, the trailer and the parts with his son, I'm kind of like, oh, that doesn't look good at all. Mm-hmm. So I'll agree with Fergus. I'd say
50%. Interesting. I'm gonna say 70%.
Whoa,
interesting. I feel like Eddie Murphy's now, he's in the well-seasoned part of his career. And I think like he will be a bit more meticulous with his picks now. So I feel like he knows what he's doing, and I'll trust him that I think he'll have something good coming out.
But definitely the first one to watch anyway. I think you'll enjoy the first one.
Yeah, I'll definitely give it a watch. But we'll move on to the main man himself. That was the appetizer to the main course, that is obviously the World War II hero, the star of the Hell and Back and the Red Badge of Courage, Audie Murphy. Is that who we're no, that was the other. I used to have countless arguments with my granddad. He always used to be like, Eddie Murphy was into Hell and Back. I was like, no, he wasn't. He's like, yes, he was. It's like, it was made in 1948. There's no way Eddie Murphy was into Hell and Back. And we're going at this back and forth about 40 minutes. And before he'd be like, it's Audie Murphy, because I'd look it up, it's like Audie Murphy, and be like, that's what I said, Eddie Murphy. Like, forget it. And we'll continue on with our Ash for the Week. This week we're doing Eddie Murphy, obviously, as we said earlier. We're discussing the highs of the highs and the lows of the lows of his career. So, Gogan, if you want to take it away with Eddie Murphy's worst rated movie.
Cheers, Adam. So his worst rated movie is one called A Thousand Words. Quick synopsis. After stretching the truth on a deal with a spiritual guru, literary agent Jack McCall finds a Bodhi tree on his property. It appears holds a valuable lesson on the consequences of every word he speaks. Long story short, yeah, there's a tree outside his house, and every time he talks, a leaf falls off the tree. And when the last leaf falls off the tree, he will die. This is a shit movie.
I want my baby back, baby back, baby back. I want my baby back, baby back. Ribs. Shit! Hey, how are you doing this?
I'm doing nothing. You and this tree are now connected.
Connected?
Seems like all your talking is making you sick.
Hey, my talking is not making me sick.
Oh, really? What happens when a tree loses all its leaves, Jack?
So what are you trying to say, Sinjin?
It's obvious to me. The more you talk, the more leaves fall, the sicker you get.
The sicker I get? So what happens if all the leaves fall off the tree?
That usually means the tree is dead.
I don't think it deserves 0% now on Rotten Tomatoes. That's a bit unfair. But I can see why it gets such a low score. Reading up on it, there was a highlighted point there. So after a disastrous US opening, the UK cinema release date was cancelled. The film was released direct to video in the UK and several European countries. Yeah. That's always a bad sign.
Yeah.
It's a weird one because I found like there was a good enough cast in it as well. You know, usually you look at, or I suppose before seeing this movie, we're like, oh, who's in it? And you see the cast, you're like, okay, yeah, maybe this could be where to go. I know you both saw it as well. Like, what do you think of it? Shit as well?
Yeah, it was shocking. Like, I mean, it was shite. Like, but I mean, I think the Rotten Tomatoes, and we discussed this, the Rotten Tomatoes kind of synopsis of the film is perfect. It says, like, you take someone basically like Eddie Murphy, you put him in a film where he can't speak, and you take away his greatest comedic tool, which is his voice, which is poignant because there was funny parts in it. Like, I mean, don't get me wrong, I didn't not laugh at certain bits. Laugh, that was a bit of an intense word to use. I might maybe a little giggle or so, but like, you know, yeah, when he could speak. I don't know, there's so much wrong with that film. Like, your man from, have you watched any of the Fear of the Walking Dead as well?
No, I haven't.
Like, your man from the Fear of the Walking Dead is in it, right? And he plays the guru in it.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. So it's the dad, isn't it?
Yeah. And he's like, I don't know, they gave him like, I don't know, he's obviously supposed to be a kind of like culturally ambiguous, I suppose, but they're leaning towards somewhere of East Asian origin. That guy is Maori.
Yeah, it's very
you took my point. The way I have him written down here is like he's like the go-to brown man for Hollywood.
Yeah, it's like maybe because he does look kind of racially ambiguous, but
I wrote down some of the,
God, it's horrible.
I wrote down some of the role, like some of the ethnicities or whatever he's played over the years, and he's been Indian, Arabic, Mexican, Samoan. I wrote down Native Indian, but I think you know what I mean. He's also played Pablo Escobar and Jesus as well. So he's quite
Pablo Escobar and Jesus.
I actually found the movie to be a bit stereotypical as well. Like, you know, you have him playing the guru. The gardener is obviously a Mexican.
Oh my God.
So fucking, he's like, ridiculous.
The most Mexican person.
Eddie Murphy has been typecast as this black guy. He often plays black people in movies, and it's just it's not on.
But going back to your point there, Ferg, and I actually read the review on Rotten Tomatoes as well. You know, taking away Eddie Murphy's voice, you can compare it to another movie that takes away another comedic's voice, which is Liar Liar. Or in a sense, you know, like
I agree with you there, but my point was, like, my main point about this film was that it's a poor man's Liar Liar.
Yeah, is it trying to be a more serious
even in music?
If he had a consequence of death.
100%. I mean, it's just that plot line's been done forever and ever, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Selfish dad has no time for his kids and his family, and, you know, he learns a lesson. Click, for example. I'm not coming at Click. I'm just saying it's a cliche kind of thing to do. But you know, Liar Liar is a great film. But the reason Liar Liar works is because Jim Carrey is a physical comedian. Mm-hmm. Like, Jim Carrey can work with his body. Do you know what I mean? And yeah, he still speaks. Yeah. He can't say certain things. But like the whole scene where he's trying to write down the word. The pen is he either has a blue pen or a red pen. Say, for example, he's a red pen and he's trying to write down the pen is blue, and he's like, and he's fighting his hand. Like, that scene is great. Like, as a kid, I couldn't tell that was just Jim Carrey fucking his hand around. I thought like they were doing something weird there, but it is. It's like a poor man's Liar Liar / Click. I enjoy Click, very sad. But I think you have a sad moment that you picked out of a Gogan that you felt a little bit like,
Yeah, like, and it's something that obviously I only watched this today, and Butler, you had kind of highlighted it to us beforehand that, you know, it's kind of going nowhere at the start. And then you kind of figure out, or then you come across a scene where the mother is introduced, but she has Alzheimer's. And I was like, oh, okay. It's like, where are they going to go, I suppose? Is the mother going to be in a loss? And obviously, throughout the movie, she appears in a couple of scenes. I have to say, some of the scenes with the mom in it are heartbreaking. Like, there's a scene towards the end of the movie, and I was like, oh, this is such a shit movie. But here's something a bit emotional, because, like, there's one thing that I like about... One message that I like, you know, it's the family comes first kind of thing, and I always feel when that's highlighted in a movie that I'll always give it a bit of applause. And one thing I did like about this movie, that it did highlight that, but that's the only kind of positive.
Yeah. No, I get you as well. And I think that, like, you know, I've had a family member that has had like dementia and Alzheimer's. So like, I understand. And like, even when the introduction of the mother character, where she thinks that he's his dad, like, I experienced exactly that happening firsthand, and I was like, Jesus, that's very harrowing stuff. And like, I think maybe you won Clyde quite well, the mother. That would be the one kind of good takeaway from the film that I would take, and that you would take obviously as well. But apart from that, it's tripe.
there's moments where you're kind of like, oh, this could be a hilarious moment. Like, there's a scene in the restaurant where he gets high or something like that, and you're like, okay, Eddie Murphy getting high, this could be good. And it's just like, what the fuck was that? Stop killing Eddie Murphy.
And even like, I think the two coffee shop scenes kind of sum it up as well, because the first scene where he's like, he doesn't want to wait in line, so he lies about his wife going into labor. I'm like, but that doesn't even make any rational sense, because anybody would just not get their coffee. It's just coffee. Like, you could get it somewhere else. You'd get it at the hospital. Yeah, and then, like, when he has to kind of basically play a big elaborate game of charades with the barista in the other scene, and you're kind of like, well, that could have been funny. But, like, the worst thing that happens to him is, like, he winds up buying a couple of CDs and a load of muffins, which is on the cusp of being funny. But also, like, you're trying to weight the movie down with this, like, if he says anything, he'll die. And the worst thing that happens to him in that situation is he winds up with a couple of CDs. So it doesn't really level up on the stakes throughout the movie. So I think there's a lot of shoddy writing in it. And Eddie Murphy does his best, though.
I agree with Eddie Murphy does his best in it. Like, I've said this before, like, you can only do so much of what's put in front of you. And I think that, like... I don't want to say there's a good film in there, but I think there's a half decent film in there somewhere. Maybe like the idea could have been executed a little bit better. Like, I liked the scene where he's talking to the French businessman. Again, another really, really heavy stereotype. I don't know what was up with this film, but it really, really hammered home stereotypes and accents. But I did like that scene where, you know, the squirrel is running around on the tree, so he's feeling what the tree is feeling, and he's like, Yeah, he's itching himself. And but the French guy is just like, oh, you like to party? Dance with him. I laughed a little bit at that. And I was like, I found myself, I was like, I'm almost angry at myself laughing at that. Because this film is terrible.
Yeah. And if they had it like stated somewhere and it'd be like, oh, there's this ancient mystic story of like leaves being associated with voice and words or something, just to tie it together. But speaking on a tree falling off a leaf, it doesn't sync up at all. You know, it'd be like every time he did, it'd make more sense if every time he did a dishonest thing, a leaf would fall off the tree. But to just speak in general, it doesn't make any sense.
And can we address the use of his words as well? Because I was shouting at the screen, being like, that scene where he's in the hotel and the girlfriend's like, you know, wearing the...
Oh, yeah. Kerry Washington in leather. I mean, that was...
Tell me what you want to do. It was like, use your words here, Eddie. Come on.
Yeah, you could probably sacrifice one word for that, like, to be fair. You know?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, also, plenty of people live their lives as mutes. And they're probably watching this movie being like, I know it's hard to speak and then go to not speaking, but I'm sure someone who has a fucking throat cancer could adapt to it. So I think Eddie Murphy, knowing that his life is on the line, you could logically just adapt to it.
And has he not?
Yeah, I'd rather lose my voice than go blind. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, like
then you won't be able to see Kerry Washington in our fine letters.
I actually look, because it's interesting that, like, you were saying, like, yo, they should have explained it more. They definitely could have tied it in, because when I Googled the film just to kind of like have a synopsis ready, just in case it was me that would have to give the quick synopsis of it, the first thing that comes up is actually like a, a picture is worth a thousand words. You know that saying?
Yeah.
So that was actually like kind of built upon a phrase that had been said before by someone called Henrik Ibsen, I think his name is. And the quote is, a thousand words leave not the same deep impression as does a single deed. So obviously the film is based off that philosophy. Do you know what I mean?
Sure.
But they could have touched on that. Like, they could have made this film a lot better if they had a touch on it a little bit, or fluffed it.
Smart enough to not mention the philosophy. Like, I mean, so like that just goes, not everyone's going to know that. So that just goes over a lot of people's heads. And it would. Maybe they're trying to be too.
They've done a lot of the groundwork as well. It's like, you know, he's a literary agent. So that could have featured in a book somewhere that he might have read. And he was like, oh, look at it. What a stupid comment. What this spiritual guru is confessing this. And it's like, okay, there's one step. And then he meets the guru. Next step. And then there's the tree. You know, it's not that hard. It's 5 minutes.
They also don't. They don't, like, he's way different to, like, Jim Carrey's Liar Liar. Whereas, like, Jim Carrey's Liar Liar would be like, you know, he'd defend the guilty people very much. There's nothing that Eddie Murphy does in this movie that sticks out as being so bad that he needs this mythical life lesson. Like, there's a part where, like, the valet's like, oh, have you not read my script? And Eddie Murphy's like, I'm slowly getting to it, which is fair enough. I'm like, you're a valet, and he's, like, a big agent. You can't just throw him your script and expect him to read it willy-nilly. He visits his mom all the time. He hates his dad who walked out on them, which is all fair enough. He seems like a good husband, you know. He doesn't want to move out of, like, a beautiful house high up in the, you know, the hills of California. There's not that much that jumps out as you're thinking, like, oh, he's a real dick.
There's not a redemption story, really, is there? Like,
Kerry Washington's character comes off kind of poor in it as well. I mean, like, you know, this guy, you know, it's a nice house that you're in. Okay, yeah, he hasn't looked at the new house that you're looking for. But I don't know. I just think she comes off real kind of bitchy. And I was like,
yeah,
poor Eddie here. He hasn't really done much wrong.
I mean, like, clearly that house can be converted. Like, let's be fair, it's a deadly house. But, like, yeah, I agree with Butler in the sense of, like, you know, he doesn't really have these irredeemable qualities. And if you were to pick out what his quote-unquote irredeemable quality is that he talks too much.
Yeah.
And it's like, if that was the case, I'd be dead. I was watching the film and I was like, I'd be dead already, fuck. And it's interesting that I just got this message from a friend of mine. My phone was down here and I was like, oh, Jesus, I hope that no one heard that buzz. And I looked at the message. Christopher Plummer just died at the ripe old age of 91.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. But let's dedicate this episode to him. This is dedicated to you, Mr. Plummer.
It is.
So back to Eddie Murphy.
Yeah, so we'll move on to his creme de la creme, his highest grossing movie. Fergus, if you want to roll with it, if you want to take your time, if you want to say what you say, don't let anybody get in your way.
Good God. Anyway, yeah, so its highest gross, highest rated film on Rotten Tomatoes is Dolomite Is My Name. And it's not My Name Is Dolomite, which I kept calling it all week. And Butler got very angry at me about it. He had to send in a voice note into the WhatsApp group. I'm going to give you a red flag. I felt like it was the Super Bowl. Flag. Well, so I'll give you a quick synopsis. Eddie Murphy portrays real-life legend Rudy Ray Moore, a comedy and rap pioneer who proved naysayers wrong when his hilarious, obscene, kung fu fighting alter ego, Dolomite, became a 1970s blacks... Ooh, what's this? I can't even say that word.
Blacks. I'm so happy you took this one because I would have struggled here.
B-L-A-X...
Blaxploitation.
Blaxploitation. Okay, blaxploitation phenomenon. Apologies for that. I've never seen that word written down. Became a 1970s blaxploitation phenomenon. Wow, that made me sound so stupid. But anyway, look,
hey, Mary Poppins to help you out.
Yeah. I've just never seen it written down. What does that even mean?
They're like movies that kind of highlight the you know, like Sweet Back and Shaft and stuff like that. The highlight,
okay.
The very,
I see. In the context of the film, I get it. Yeah, okay, now I get you. But look, anyway, yeah, this is his highest rated film, and I don't think any of us had seen this until we had to sit down and watch it. It was the same thing with A Thousand Words, you know. Okay, this is different because this is actually an amazing film. A Thousand Words was shocking, that's why I'd never seen it. I saw a trailer for this a while ago. It actually came out 25th of October 2019. And I don't know, it just kind of passed me by. It was a Netflix film, so I was like, I didn't think much of it. But it's really highly rated on Rotten Tomatoes. Not as highly rated on IMDb. It comes in at a 7.3, which is kind of middling for them. Middling to good-ish. But it stars Eddie Murphy, Keegan-Michael Key, who is Key from Key and Peele, Craig Robinson, who I love, Snoop Dogg is in it, and Wesley Snipes, who is, I think, is hilarious in it.
He ran up on the line the very next day. He said, "Oh, Mr. Lion, there's a big, bad, burly motherfucker coming your way." He said, "If he's somebody that you don't know, because he just broke a loose from Ranglin Brothers Show." He said, "He talked about your people in a hell of a way. Yes, he talked about your people till my hair turned gray." He said, "Your daddy's a freak and your mama's a whore." Said he spotted you in the jungle selling your black ass from door to door.
I loved this film. It's funny. It's, you know, it was a little bit of a kind of a, you know, a heartwarming kind of, you're rooting for Ray, you know what I mean? You're like, come on, you can fucking do it, you can do this. And, you know, he seems like a nice guy in the film where, you know, he's making this film and he there's this kind of line from him where he's like, you know, if someone asked me to make the sandwiches, I'm going to make a fucking sandwich for them. Or, you know, if the light's broken, I'm going to help fix it. It's like, no one's in charge here. We're making a movie. Let's all work together. But it's a really, I don't know, it's kind of heartwarming in a way, but it was funny. And I think we all agreed where it's kind of like it's Eddie Murphy back to his best. I mean, he had a lot of bad stuff for a while. And this is why you said you were hopeful for maybe coming to America too, because this is his first film since Dolomite.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, he did A Thousand Words, and then he did a movie called Mr. Church, which I don't think was the best. And he took like a kind of a big break, and this was his kind of return. And he kind of, the similarities he has with Rudy Ray, because he's like, you know, this is probably Eddie Murphy's probably last throw of the dice of Hollywood. I mean, like, it's one thing to make a bad huge budget movie, but to make a bad indie movie producer would be looking at and be like, well, you're not bankable. So yeah. Like, this was a gamble for him. Especially like a movie like this, where it's like, you know, as a blaxploitation, not the most popular category of movies ever made. And like, even though like there's a lot of stuff about this guy Rudy Ray Moore at the end that like you'd be like, oh shit, I never knew he did X, Y, and Z. It's not a well-known person at all. Like, I mean, the only thing I knew about Dolomite was in the episode of Futurama where Fry's dog Seymour is frozen in rock. The rock is called Dolomite, named after Dolomite. Because I looked up on the episode of Futurama when I heard it, and they were like, this is like an homage to Dolomite.
Oh, really?
Professor Farnsworth says like, the cool, funky, hard groove of Dolomite rock or something like that.
Oh, that makes sense then. And is that the same episode in Futurama, or is that a different one where he's like, Bender's like walking around like a pimp. It's like, Bender, baby, we love you. Shut up, baby, I know.
No, I think that's a different one, but obviously there must be a few Dolomite fans in the writer's room at Futurama. Gogan, what do you think of Dolomite?
Oh, I loved it. Absolutely loved it. As Fergus had said there, hadn't seen it before. We decided to pursue Eddie Murphy as the actor of the week. I think it's back to peak Eddie Murphy. He plays the character so well, helped by the fantastic cast. And it's kind of a heartwarming movie as well, because as you said, you're rooting for him, and it's just, it kind of shows the good in humanity as well. A lot of stuff that he does, and even, you know, towards the end where he's going towards the premiere and decides to spend it with the fans and the audience instead. I was like, oh, that's nice, you know. And it's funny as well. There's some
stuff
I'm laughing my head off. I just really, really enjoyed it. It's good to see Eddie Murphy back.
It is, isn't it? And like, you know, like you compare it to 1,000 Words, Eddie Murphy is like spewing, like he's verbal diarrhea in this film, like he did in the '80s. And it's back to his best, because they just gave him this character to work with. I'm sure that like they needed someone, you know, to be able to spit this kind of stuff. And like the only other people I could think of maybe would be like Chris Tucker, but he's not old enough. You know what I mean? I mean, like Rudy Ray Childs was old when, you know, he had all these records out as the film shows and it doesn't go well. And it's actually quite funny then when Snoop Dogg plays one of his records instead of one of his comedy records in the record store. But it's genius. It's a really heartwarming story. Like, I as you said, Logan, you find yourself rooting for him, but it's hilarious. The only thing I thought about it, and I looked up about like the real Rudy Ray Charles, I think about the bum.
I don't want to cut across you. It's Rudy Ray Moore.
Rudy Ray Moore.
Ray Charles. Different.
Ray Charles.
Different.
Excuse me. That's blaxploitation right there. So anyway, I'll just call him Rudy Ray from now on. I do think about the bum that, you know, he essentially, in a way, stole it from. Like, he gave him some whiskey. I read up about the real Rudy Ray, and he said, yeah, I took him to my apartment, and, you know, I gave him some whiskey and a couple of dollars, and I recorded him saying all this stuff. Obviously, he came up with, you know, more of his own stuff after that, because, you know, there obviously wasn't enough tape to release several albums of stuff. But he took the original stuff in this bum, and I'm like, that bum probably died on the street, homeless, freezing, and he's like living the life at one stage because of stuff that he took from him.
That's true. But I mean, it's like a tiny thing that he makes so big. I think like there's a review of this movie, and they call it the blaxploitation version of The Disaster Artist that we saw together, Fergus.
Oh yeah.
And while I could see the similarities, I think the difference is the guy made the room, what's his name? Tommy
Wiseau.
Chow. Tommy Wiseau.
That's way worse than Charles.
Probably, yeah. Tommy Wiseau, the room is awful. Well, Rudy Ray Moore here, he's unbelievably talented. He's so fucking funny. Yeah. Even like the little duet he comes up with the woman who's brilliantly played by, I have her name here to give a shout out, Devine Joy Randolph. That little kind of parody of like Jackson, Johnny Cash, June Carter thing.
Yeah. I knew you liked that.
I thought he delivers lines, and I thought the funny thing would be he's going to be a bad actor. And you can kind of see it at the start, but I think he really kind of pulls it together, and he really gets into is Dolomite character for the movie.
I'm going to watch the actual Dolomite film. It's on YouTube, by the way, the full film. I watched, so in the scene, another part that I thought was really funny was they have like the warden that releases Dolomite from prison is like a white guy, and your one who plays, you know, the June Carter type in the film, she's like, oh, so he's asking her, you know, what have you done before this, and she's like, oh, this is actually my first time doing this, and you know, I've done some comedy on stage, what about you? And he's like, you know, I always find that when black folks are making stuff, they need a white person in the film. You know, I've played angry racist man. I've played plantation owner, a rapist. And she's like, yeah, you just found something that you were good at and you went with it. Yeah. And then, so I watched that actual scene that he's in, because when he does the scene in the film, Eddie Murphy breaks character as Dolomite and goes, damn, that was amazing. That was really... Look at his eyes. That was really real acting. And I watched the actual scene where they're in the office and your man is shocking. He's terrible. The guy who plays the warden is awful. But it's just funny. It's funny like how similar the actual setting was to the real film. They really kept it very close. And I think that's why I didn't watch Dolomite when I originally heard about it. I thought it was just some random film. But I only found out when we decided to go with Eddie Murphy that this was a true story. And it made the film like 50 times better.
Definitely. And for talking about funny scenes, I just found this great. He's trying to sell the record at first, and they talk about cocksucking, and the producer's just like,
yeah.
No, Rudy, you can say cocksucker on a record, but you can't say woman sucking a cock. Do you see the difference? And he's like, no, I don't see any goddamn difference. And they go back and forth for ages and they leave, and the guy's just like, well, Rudy held the meeting up. I was going to some semantic shit about sucking cocks, but just the way he delivers the line.
Yeah. Oh, I know, so he's pretty, cool. Like, that thing is Eddie Murphy's delivery was perfect for the film. And I think that, like, you know, like, if we can go off Dolomite and start talking about maybe more of his in between films, you know, his filmography, I suppose. If you look at his more recent ones that were bad, again, you can only do so much with what was put in front of you, like e.g. like Tower Heist. My name is Dave. Sorry, Goggin. Do you know what I mean? I mean, he's doing these films. It's like, this isn't you. Like, you know, give him a script where he can say motherfucker and he can be street and he can be himself.
Yeah.
Be Eddie Murphy, like. And he's gonna shine, and that shows in Dolomite. Like, give him something like Terror Heist, and he's gonna fucking shit to bed.
Yeah, that movie's just called Meet Dave. You love putting that title in front of things.
I'd probably do, yeah.
My name is Beverly Hills Cop.
great film though. Well, yeah. Look, I mean, you know, if we go all the way back. Let's go back in the life of Eddie Murphy.
The year is 1982.
The year is 1982.
Reagan, let's get the fuck out of here.
He's in a film with a very raspy voiced white man.
Oh, yeah. From Nicholas Nolte.
Nicholas Nolte. Have you seen?
I've seen the first one. I've seen the first one. I'm not enamored with it like some people are, but I think it's fine. It's not one of mine.
That was his first film. Which I found really interesting.
Yeah, it's kind of a, like, if you're doing Saturday Night Live at the time, I don't think it's an out-and-out comedy, you know?
Mm.
To jump from. Have you seen it, Gogan?
I haven't, no. I don't know if I'd go back and watch it, but...
I think 48 Hours is well worth the watch.
Yeah?
It's like, it's almost like the original... Not the original, but like it's a real kind of old school buddy cop film where, you know, they're almost like the odd couple as well. So I think it's where like the, you know, stuff like what we love, Gogan, Rush Hour kind of came from. Like Nick Nolte's a white cop.
Leave that in, yeah.
Yeah. Like Nick Nolte's a white cop in the 80s. I don't think he's particularly race sensitive, if we'll put it that way. Okay. And Eddie Murphy's a wisecracking, you know, convict that he gets to help him. Great film. I haven't seen the second one either, Butler, another 48 Hours. But I think, okay, if I was to say, you know, so many in the catalogue, definitely my favourite film slash film series of Eddie Murphy, it has to be Beverly Hills Cop.
Oh, it has to be, yeah. It's...
Fuller's making a face.
Well, he has I loved the first one and the third one. I said I've not seen the second one. I prefer
the movie.
Trading Places. Yeah. I love Trading Places and I love it as a Christmas film.
Yeah.
But I love Beverly Hills Cop. I think it's brilliant. It's so funny. And like what's annoying about one of my favorite quotes from the first one, it's almost like I can't say it because it uses the M word. Like, you know, when he goes to the Beverly Hills Hotel and he's trying to get like a reservation for free, essentially, he's like, I have a reservation. Like, Axel Foley. No, there's nothing here. It's like, oh, sorry, it should be under Rolling Stones, Axel Foley. And they're like, no, it's not here. And he goes in this rant, you know, saying, oh, he's this small-time person. This is why you don't have my room there, even though there's no room there. And it's pure Eddie Murphy because you feel like someone like Eddie Murphy could get away with that in real life because he's got the gift of the gab. He's got that golden kind of voice and you believe what he says. But he goes on, and it's so funny. He was like, I'm in town to do an exclusive interview with Michael Jackson, and I was going to call the interview Michael Jackson Sitting on Top of the World, but I might as well call it Michael Jackson Can Sit on Top of the World as long as it's not in the Beverly Hills Hotel because they don't allow any N-words in here.
I wonder how much of like the Beverly Hills and obviously of his movies were just ad-libbed, you know, like here's the script and there's like, you know what, you add in what you want here for certain parts.
Yeah,
I feel like that was something he was just like, yeah, I'm going with this, like,
yeah, because how do you write
that probably
the intensity behind it, I think, as well,
probably Lowick's. When you were saying before it was originally written for like Sylvester Stallone or something. So I mean, I'd imagine Eddie Murphy lived quite a bit. Yeah.
Well, Eddie,
you can't see like Sylvester Stallone saying like, you know, going to do an interview with Michael Jackson and the Beverly Hills Hotel.
Oh yeah, because like thank you for reminding me that, because there's this film, I probably would have mentioned it on a practice podcast that we did called Cobra. And I was watching, I was just like, you know, browsing through, like, you know, midweek. I don't know, it might have been like a Saturday night or something, because I don't think I was up early, because it was definitely late at night. And you know, the Sky gives you the synopsis of what the film is, you press the info button. And instead of telling you what the film was about, it said, Cobra, 1986. Sylvester Stallone's version of Beverly Hills Cop that he wanted to make. I was like, I'm going to have to watch it now. I mean, he was the reason he was in Beverly Hills Cop, but he was kicked off the film because obviously Beverly Hills Cop forever has seen it, or forever who hasn't seen it. It is, you know, it's a lighthearted comedy. It's a funny, dark, humored comedy action. And he wanted to make it dark and gritty and they wouldn't do it. And he kept trying to change the script. So they said, fuck off, get off, leave. So then he made his own film, Cobra, and it was absolutely garbage. Yeah, I mean, I could talk forever about Beverly Hills Cop. Like, it's hilarious. It's funny. It's the epitome of the 80s. The soundtrack is brilliant in all three films. Yeah, I mean, look, is there any other Eddie Murphy films that you pop in there, like, for your favorite?
I think you have to give him recognition for probably one of the best animated movies ever made, Shrek. I think he's fucking fantastic. And honestly, one of my favorite, as I said, animated movies to watch, because it's just so good. And I think it's actually underrated, but he's brilliant for that part. Like, I can watch it as an adult and probably laugh as much as I did when I was a kid watching it as well. So,
yeah,
great. Second one's great as well. And then they kind of go downhill.
I agree. I think the second one gets a better rating than the first one as well. So, yeah, which I disagree with, but. Yeah, he's fantastic. And I will probably mention, we've already mentioned Trading Places, but I think I wouldn't be forgiven if I didn't mention this one. And this is more of a Kira recommendation. It's Daddy Daycare.
I love that film.
I love it. I love it, boy.
I like Daddy Daycare. It's great.
No, I love it, but our Rotten Tomatoes audience doesn't look like they like it as much, but who cares? Because we love it.
I thought that was a good foray at the time for him, but that could have been his downfall as well, doing films like that.
What do you mean? Yeah, kind of.
Yeah, that was like his gateway drug into terrible family movies.
It could have been. I mean, like, I loved the original Nutty Professor, not the original one, as in like the fucking one from the 50s or 60s, whenever it was.
When Jerry Lewis one.
Jerry Lewis, yeah, not the Jerry Lewis one. I actually watched the Jerry Lewis one. It was on Film 4 during the day one time. It's fucking shocking. The things that people watched. This is why I have such a bias against like old films, and like I'm always proved wrong. But like the things that people found funny back then, you're like, God. You have the mental age of a 4-year-old. Like Jerry Lewis, these fake teeth and everything in. It's like, sweet Jesus. Anyway, I loved the original Nutty Professor. I suppose it's one of those ones that it's something from your childhood. Again, with Dr. Doolittle, I loved it as a kid.
Yep.
But they're obviously not very good films. And then Nutty Professor went on a little bit too long. It got like several sequels, including like the clumps about his family and that kind of stuff. I mean, I always go back to like the first
one. One sequel,
huh?
It was two. Sequel to Nutty Professor.
There was, three? I think, just three. Wasn't there like Nutty Professor 2 and then the clumps was like another one?
It was, yeah, Nutty Professor. Sorry, I thought I had them listed there. Nutty Professor and the clumps. Another Professor 2.
There you go. There is 3. But
not present.
No, hang on. I could have sworn. I'm literally going through his list here of movies. So
maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm doing like a Mandela effect on it, and I just thought it went on longer than it should have. But it shouldn't have got a second film either way, regardless.
So maybe it's because you've seen fat suits on much you could be forgiven in thinking there's more than there is.
Yeah, I mean, look, my point about it is that, like, I think when you play yourself in a fat suit, it's like the almost like death of your career or the start of the downhill of your career. Like, he did Norbit after that, which was an absolutely god-awful film, in a fat suit again. Adam Sandler did the one Jack and Jill, which is probably one of the worst films ever made. Someone else did a fat suit one as well. I can't remember. Like, I mean, these people are just coming kind of back into their prime. Huh?
Your man from Bad Boys. I can't think of the name of the fucking movie.
Martin Lawrence. Yeah. But like that. No, I know. Like, Big Mama's House was funny. I haven't seen it in years. Is it funny now? Who knows? I suppose. I don't know. I mean, look, you could use Mrs. Doubtfire as an example as well, using a fat suit and that. I'm saying that it's not that the film is bad, that's almost like a career trajectory that goes the wrong way.
Yeah. If you ask them at the start, is that their target? I'm sure they'd say no.
Yeah. I mean, don't get me wrong, I love Mrs. Doubtfire. I was a big fan of Big Mama's House, but then Big Mama's House got a sequel as well. Awful.
Agreed.
Yeah.
But
throw out any ones that I also like. One I want to give a shout out to, it's a bit of a obscure one, and this is one I wanted to say, where, like, as I was saying off air earlier, RTE and TV3 in Ireland, for anyone who's not Irish is listening, which I doubt, they used to show really obscure movies at the time, I thought, and they were great. Now they show the same old crap all the time. But a movie that used to always show around Halloween, I thought this was great. Have either of you seen Vampire in Brooklyn?
Love it. It always used to be on Comedy Central.
I haven't seen it.
It's not on anywhere anymore. I forgot it existed till today, until I went through his filmography.
Eddie Murphy with fucking beautiful Jerry curls down to his back.
I thought you were asking.
That's black
for a second.
Sorry?
I thought you were going to say The Haunted Mansion.
I love that when it came out.
Well, sure, it seemed like that one, don't you?
I like it. I liked it when it came out. I think we were
young enough.
Young enough to like it. Now, if I watched that, I'd probably like that.
I remember seeing that in the cinema.
I've seen Vampire in Brooklyn.
No.
I
it's good. It's definitely good to watch.
Would you like Vampire in Brooklyn now if you saw it? Like, if you hadn't seen it before?
And be honest.
Well, I mean, would you like Dr. Doolittle now if you never saw it before?
No. That's my point.
But if you had like a 6-year-old illegitimate child somewhere, little Friggle Jr., would you? He'd find Dr. Doolittle funny though. So there's always an audience for him.
Well, obviously he wouldn't be my son because my name is Fergus.
Very good, Friggle.
I've known Butler for.
Where are you, Friggle Jr.?
How old are we now? 29. I'm pretty sure I know Butler since I was about 14, so that hurts. But I know what you mean.
I could call him Cranapple.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
I've been calling him Cranapple.
Yeah. I've been calling her Crandall. another name I got wrong. That would be my point. Like, there's certain films that you have like a nostalgia for because you would have saw it years ago. Maybe Vampire in Brooklyn, because it's not something that I saw when I was young. It's something that I saw when I was like, I don't know, my teens, maybe just on Comedy Central. So you might like it, Colgan. It's a bit of fun. Like, it's an 80s film. So.
Oh, look, if it was ever on, I'm sure I'd sit down and watch it. I'd rather sit down and watch again. Sorry.
I was just going to say to Fergus, I think we have to give a shout out to one of our personal favourites, Life.
Oh, Life. Oh, my God. I actually nearly forgot about it because I thought you were going to mention Golden Child, which we'll get back to. But Life is amazing. I love
that. It's really underappreciated one because it's kind of come around that time where you're like, oh, Eddie Murphy movies, kind of hit and miss. But it's really funny and it's a really good story. And the occasional sweet moment in as well to kind of round it all off.
And it's true.
Is it?
Yeah, it's true story.
I didn't know that. Is it?
It is.
Wait, if they escape from prison, how could it be a true story? They just capture them, put them back in prison.
No, there's a story about, when they're at the baseball game at the end. Maybe I'm wrong, but they're at the baseball game.
Yeah.
At the time, they were like, they're still alive or whatever. Hold on, I'm going to look this up. I don't want to make, I probably made a total arse of myself, but I'm pretty sure I thought that was like, not the whole thing. Ray Charles. Hold on. Give me 1 second when I just looked this up. Hold on. I'm pretty sure it was like almost based on something, or I could be completely wrong. Maybe that was just a fake thing thrown in at the end that filled me at the time, because I haven't seen it in years.
Oh, I think it is.
It must be a fake thing, isn't it?
Yeah, just like Ray and Malcolm.
You know what it is, right? It's not a true story. I haven't seen it probably, I'd say, easily, I don't know, near 10 years. I think what it was is that it was almost like a little thing for the characters of like, oh, they're here today doing this. And maybe at the time I thought it was a true story. I haven't seen it in years. It's actually something I need to rewatch.
That's always on Comedy Central as well. That is my motherfucking cornbread.
Yeah.
You can have cornbread.
Yeah. You don't even like cornbread. Yeah. It's the principle of the thing.
I'm the baby.
I love when they're balancing on the bottles. I can't believe I thought that was a true story. I know, in my head, but like, it's not like I went my whole life thinking it was a true story. I think like when we were talking about it there, I was like, was that a true story? Maybe not. But I love when they're like they're old and they're back in prison and they're like balancing on the bottles. And he starts giggling. He's like, what the hell are you laughing at? He's like, oh, my toe slipped into one of the bottles. And they start giggling. And then they fall off the bottles. Your man's going to shoot them.
Can anyone hear reading? It's just like Eddie Murphy. Like, I can't. He reads out like the letter. It's just like, it's from your cousin. And he's like, your papa is dead. Your mama is dead. Your sister, she ran away and she's also dead. Your dog, Skeeter, he's dead. your granddad had a heart attack, but he recovered. Oh, that's good. Oh, he turns over the page. Oh no, he's dead. It's like, you're sure like the whole family has died. And then just like, anyone else got a letter they want to read? No.
Yeah, like it's a letter. And like, even when they're in the old folks' home, and he's just like, your man's trying to sell him coke, and he's like, you know where that came from? Someone's ass. That came in here in someone's ass. It's like, and then you're sticking it up your nose.
Logan, have you seen Life yet?
No, and to be honest, when he's brought it up, it was one that I wanted to say, I hadn't seen and I want to see, because two of my favorite actors and comedians in it, Eddie Murphy and Martin Lawrence. But from what I've heard you saying already, I will definitely be sitting down and watching it.
I'll just try out the ones I dislike, and I'll try them out to you guys if you have any other ones. Obviously, Terror Heists was bad, Norbit was shocking. The Avengers of Pluto Nash was terrible. And then one I actively remember disliking as like a 10-year-old was Showtime.
Is that the cop one?
Yeah, that's the cop
one. Oh, so bad.
No, I've never seen that one.
I was like one of those ones you pick out if you went to like Extra Vision or Chapbusters, and then you're like, oh, what's this? All right.
When you're like 9 and you just see like Eddie Murphy in the cover and you're like, oh, I'll get this. And you're like, whoa, this is shit.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Eddie Murphy and Robert De Niro.
Yeah. Oh, so bad.
Wow. You think a buddy cop movie, 2002. What did I say? Early 2000s. Awful. One that we didn't mention that I love, I'm a big fan of it. It's one of my favorite Disney films, which is Mulan.
Mm. Yeah, excellent.
He's in Mulan, is he?
Yeah, he plays the little dragon.
Little dragon, yeah. He's brilliant.
I don't think I've ever seen Mulan.
Oh. Do yourself a favor and watch it.
Kogan, I'm actually right. If we're talking about like animated Disney films from the 90s, Mulan is one of my favorite ones. It's brilliant.
To be honest, I actually would agree with you there. I got to a stage where I probably overwatched it back when I was a kid. I just have never gone back to it, but I completely agree. One of the top rated animated movies, and I haven't gone near the remakes that they've done.
Well, they got in trouble for that one, didn't they? The new one.
Yeah. So happy to have memories of the old one.
He plays Mushu, the little dragon, your guardian in it, and it's like a donkey esque character. Obviously, this is his first foray into animation before playing donkey, and he's gassing it. It's, you know, perfect because he's just like, he's supposed to be this all powerful dragon, but he accidentally knocks over the all powerful dragon statue, and then he comes out and he's pretending to be that dragon, but he's this little tiny little lizard basically. But Mulan's great, music and all is fantastic in it, and that's why I steered away from the new Mulan as well, because the new Mulan doesn't have any music in it.
What are you doing?
I know, yeah, and bring back the Szechuan sauce.
Please.
we'll wrap up on. But anyone else have any good or bad Eddie Murphy news before we wrap up?
Have you not seen Pluto Nash? You're trying to give me Pluto Nash at one stage.
Yeah, it's shy.
Yeah. No, I know. Yeah, but yeah. I was like, you're not going to mention how bad it is.
No. Oh, well, I. It's just terrible. I don't know too much. I saw it once when I was like,
it's not worth your time.
Actually bad. Again, early 2000s, and you know, music like Monkey Bone and things like that are terrible. Yeah. Yeah. Did you have anything else to round off?
No, like I had a few points that I had mentioned or that I had listed. One that I thought was interesting. He was actually considered for Chris Rock's role in Lethal Weapon 4. I do think Chris Rock was perfect for that role in the end, but it would have been interesting to see Eddie Murphy play that character.
Yeah, well, Chris Rock's a bit younger and it's King's daughter, so I think it works better, doesn't it?
It does, yeah, it does. But again, they probably could have made it work with Eddie Murphy. But would have been interesting. And I saw another point there is he was the first actor to receive $1 million for his first film. Now, again, it's a bit vague, that statement. I'd like to kind of read a bit more into that, but thought that was an interesting point. And then my final one was the first actor to receive a BAFTA nomination for a voiceover performance, Best Supporting Actor, and that was for Shrek. But that's everything I have on Mr. Murphy.
And we are back with our reviews from the movies that are recommended to each other on the previous episode. We will start with David Comagogan, and he can tell us about the movie I selected for him in good faith that he will turn around to me and go, oh, Adam, that was a marvelous piece of cinema. Thank you very much for that. But I feel this conversation isn't going to go that way. So Gogan, take it away with what I recommended to you.
Thank you, Adam. And look, thank you for selecting the movie because it still was a massive improvement on the other movies I've had to watch over the last couple of weeks and months. The movie you picked for myself, There Will Be Blood, starring Daniel Day-Lewis. Quick synopsis, silver miner Daniel Plainview, played by Daniel Day-Lewis, leads a hardscrabble life with his son HW when he hears about oil oozing from the ground near the western town of Little Boston. Daniel takes his son on a mission to find their fortune. Daniel makes his lucky strike and becomes a self-made tycoon. but as the fortune grows, he deviates into moral bankruptcy. There you go. That's it. And that's all I have to say, because I was very disappointed. I was very disappointed by this. It gets 92% on Rotten Tomatoes. I'm like, really? This is about 50%, and that's me being generous. I'm going to contradict myself slightly here, because I think Daniel Day-Lewis is brilliant in it. You know, his acting is phenomenal. It's brilliant. Paul Dano or Dano? Paul Dano, thank you. Also plays not the priest. How would you say it? The what? Preacher, sorry, thank you. Yeah, I think he's fantastic as well. But that's it. You know, I think the runtime, what was I saying the runtime was? It's like 2 hours, 45 minutes or something like that. Fucking ridiculous. It just goes on way too long. What's the fucking point? Then I was thinking, I was writing my notes on this, and I was like, okay, am I being too harsh here? Let's have a look back at some of the scenes and some of the some things that happen in the movie. And I was like, okay, what happens in the movie? But I didn't like when his brother gets introduced, and I was like, oh, this is a bit predictable. I can kind of see where this is going to go. And then after about another fucking 45 minutes or an hour into the movie, we discover, yeah, Dave, you're right. There's an hour wasted of the movie. I know maybe we do learn a lot of life lessons in between that error, and Day-Lewis does do quite well on the screen, but that's me being generous now. I'm really digging into some of the scenes in this movie that I'm like, okay, maybe this is why I got such a high rating, but it's not my type of movie. I did not enjoy this. And
take away, Willer.
Wounded by those comments. Where to start with a report? Well, firstly, before everything else, did you not find the scene where the oil or whatever catches fire absolutely amazing?
Maybe if I saw it in the cinema, I would have. I was watching on TV last night. I was like, yeah, it's good, but like again,
the pacing, the cinematography,
Go back to your son who's fucking deaf.
That's the point. Like, I mean, he become like, you see how kind of little he sort of cares from throughout the movie. And he's like, when he leaves him on the spoiler, he leaves him on the train. That's gut wrenching.
I know, but then part of me is kind of like, and I refer back to one of the last scenes in the movie where his son is telling him he's going to start his own business. And he's annoyed because he's like, well, you're my competition now. But he also says, well, you're not my son. You're just this fucking kid that was left at the side of a mine. And but then I'm kind of like, well, does he really mean that? Because at the end of the day, he did. I know he left him on the train, but he left him to get to be able to kind of progress his life. You know, he got the teacher that taught him how to carry on and how to I suppose speak going forward, and he did love him. So I was kind of like, oh, all right, maybe this is kind of where the movie should be is aimed at, you know, and portrayed. But I don't know, like I feel they could have taken 45 minutes out of the movie and got all the messages they wanted across in the same time.
Possibly, but I think, well, I don't think you really care for someone that much, because I think, yeah, he sticks him on a train to a deaf skill, basically, but he does it when he realises the child's no longer of use, and because he could have, like, the darling child on the stage and be like, this is my son, and he kind of looks all cute, and, like, they're wearing, like, the matching gear, and be like, oh, we can trust him, he's a family. When you see a deaf child, from his point of view, he thinks, this is kind of sad, it doesn't make me look strong. So that's why he gets shot of him. And when he comes across his brother, he starts to make it look like we're a family thing again. We're two strong brothers, and this is like a grassroots thing. So that's just his kind of manipulation of people.
Yeah,
and look, it does probably go on long in parts. And I think the stuff with his brother, like when they go out to the woods and stuff, you can cut that back about 10 minutes. But I think the pacing is deliberate because, like Madness, it's a slow descent. It doesn't happen instantly.
Yeah,
and you think you have to watch him go down that rabbit hole of greed and insanity to... Because, like, you need these movies to be like The Shining. It's this slow, slow burn. And then the payoff when he's absolutely mental. He's got, like, a bowling alley in, like, 1920, which I think is, like, it was a hugely, like, lavish thing at the time. He's drinking milkshakes. He has all these, like, things of the future that he surrounds himself with. And I think it's, like, just, you show that he's just completely gone nuts.
Yeah, I did I did enjoy the, in fairness, referencing the bowling alley and when he's... talking to the preacher again, and he gets the preacher to kind of admit that he's a fraud himself. I was like, I'm not going to lie, I did enjoy that scene, you know. And in fairness, I also did enjoy the scene where the preacher gets is baptizing Daniel Day-Lewis, and he's getting him to admit that he's failed his son. And I was kind of like, you know what?
That's,
They're good. But again, these are parts of the movie that stand out. And I know you're saying it's a slow burner and it's meant to be like that. I just feel take a little bit out of it. Maybe add parts in. You know, part of me, and this is probably not what the movie was about, and it's not, but his son marrying that daughter, the girl in the end, I wouldn't have minded to see maybe an extra 10, 15 minutes of a quick kind of breakdown of them as well. But again, that's probably taken away from Daniel Day-Lewis and being the main character in this, but look, these are just points that I've taken away from it.
I mean, look, I agree with it in the sense of, like, I mean, I know you're arguing about, like, the way he treated the son and stuff like that and whatever, but he, like, Butter is making the point of, which is true, is that he's, everything he does is just to drive monetary gain.
Yeah.
Like, his goal is, he's a very focused man. His goal is to make money, he's an oil man, is to make himself commercially successful. And he'll do whatever he can.
You see that after he gets baptized as well. He says
He gets baptized because it's like something like Trump. You know what I mean? Remember Trump walked to the church with his Bible, which was the biggest piece of shit I've ever seen in my entire life. He got the army to walk him through a lot of protesters, to stand outside the church to get a picture with a Bible. Made himself look like a fool, but in his mind, he was like, I need to appeal to the people who like me, who are the ultra-Christian people. Mm-hmm. So he's trying to appeal to all these different walks of life of, you know, look, oh, here's my son. You know, I'm a family man, you know. Because he goes on these little rants, you know, like, I'm a family man. And it's all part of his shtick. Do you know what I mean? He's like a snake oil salesman. He's like a really, really successful snake oil salesman. He's fooling people into liking him. He's trying to hit every single demographic, and like Butler said, that's what the slow burn comes into, because he's trying to hit all these demographics, he's trying to have this wide berth, and it ends up driving him mad. And it's this slow descent into madness, I think, of like trying to, not everybody's going to like you. This is the thing with people, right? Not everyone's going to understand you, not everyone's going to like you. It's a slow descent into madness, and I haven't watched it yet, but I'm gonna watch The Lighthouse soon.
Was that with Willem Dafoe?
Buller didn't like it, obviously.
Yes. No, I thought that was... There's a fine line between art and pretension, and I thought it goes on the scale of pretension way too much.
And based off what Adam has just said there, I'm gonna stay far, far, far away from that.
You Davis. I just like, yeah, I mean, look, he's amazing, isn't it? I love the film. Butler was sickened that you didn't like the film.
I'm sorry. Look, Butler, I'm sorry. And thank you for, like, picking out a good movie for me, but...
He was giving you a winner and you felt punished.
I didn't. Oh, look, yeah, punished is all right. But it was such a slow burner that I was kind of like, ah. Yeah, I was...
Well, look, there's plenty of popular movies I don't like, so I begrudgingly accept your review of it. Look, I love it. I think it's like it's real. I love those kind of Western vibe.
Yeah, you like still, the Western movie, by, don't you?
Yeah, and I think I still say, like, is there a better performance ever, pound for pound, than Daniel Day-Lewis in this? I mean, if you watch it on your TV, your neighbors could feel the vibrations coming from him like three doors down. It's incredible, I think, his performance in this.
Yeah, it's
powerful, like, in fairness. Like, he really embodies the character. And, like, yeah, he has to, like, he has to spend a year becoming this character. I mean, we talked about The Phantom Thread, me and you, Bull Armour, saying, like, you know, it wasn't that good of a film. Yet he spent an entire year learning how to sew to do this film. Do you know what I mean? The man puts in the fucking the hours to really get these characters, and you really feel that he becomes these people. Like, there's almost, like, you can actually see the madness in his eyes, because I think that Daniel Day-Lewis drove himself semi-mad trying to become this character.
He deafened one of his children to
That poor kid, poor Dillian.
Wait around the corner with like a fucking firework.
Yeah.
April.
Oh, Dan Jr. Bang. Imagine living with him though. Imagine living with him when he's trying to get out the character and he's screaming at you about milkshakes. I don't know, chocolate. Jesus.
I don't think my left foot would have been much better either. Who was these semi-bad drawings all over the place? Daniel, was it you?
No.
Put some socks on, for God's sake.
What's great, I mean, my mom actually knew the actual Christy Brown.
Yeah, it's just up on Sandway Road. There's a plaque on one of the houses where he lived.
Mad.
Yeah. Our little mini history tour of our area, Fergus. It's quite broad, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Crumlin slash Harold Cross, isn't it?
Yeah,
Kimmage. Gogan, give me a score. What did you say? 50 out of 100?
Yeah, 50.
Fine. We'll move on, and so there won't be any bloodshed, any tears. Fergus, what did Gogan recommend for you?
I was going to say, this will also be our last podcast. it's over. The dream is over.
New boy.
I was annoyed. Like, I was like, look, this film is it is what it is. But I was like, really, two terrible Antonio Banderas films. I was given. I really thought, like, after my ex versus Sever trauma, that I would have got something a little bit better. But this is just as bad, in my opinion.
Come on.
Yeah, no, it is. Like, I mean, it has the odd saving grace, but... Okay, right, so...
I can't defend it. I completely agree with you.
Like, right, okay, so the film is called Security. And it was released in 2017, and I knew straight away. I was like, oh, an Antonio Banderas film in recent years, you know, it's gonna be bad. And I will say, I don't know what happened to Tony, but he released six films in 2017. I'm like, he's strapped for money, he's strapped for cash. Tony Band, are you all right? Do you have a gambling habit that we don't know about? Because he released six very bad films in 1 year, all obviously straight to DVD action films.
I just wanted to retire and be like, six movies can get me so much income.
No, but then he's done like fucking 25 since. Anyway, a security guard protects an 11-year-old girl who is being targeted by a gang for participating as a trial witness. I don't know where to start in this film. Okay, I'll give you the cast, which shocked me. One person. So Antonio Banderas, obviously Eduardo Eddie Deacon. The bad guy is Ben Kingsley. What was he thinking? The man's an Oscar winner. Like, I don't know who handed him this script. Or if he was high at the time and he was like, yeah, fuck it, let's do it. It's shocking. It's an awful, awful film. I think I talked to you about this earlier, Gogan. I thought, you know, maybe if this film might have been made in the 80s, it would have worked. Essentially, in the film, you know, this girl is getting transported by FBI agents. They get attacked by, I want to say, terror, whatever, the mob, whoever she's testifying, her parents have testified against. They've already killed their parents. She's the only one left to testify against them. She escapes, runs into a mall that's like locked up at night. Antonio Banderas is an ex-Marine who's just started a job here. There's no character development in any way, shape, or form. Like, they say about Antonio Banderas is that, like, he was a captain in the army and he needs a job, and he hasn't had a job in ages, so they give him a job as a security guard because he begs for it, essentially. The guys who are security guards with him are the most annoying people on the planet. So you have this guy who's like the head of security, who has these massive sideburns and like a Johnny Bravo hair flick. I'm like, who was the costume or hair makeup person for this film? That was a fucking shocking idea. You look ridiculous already. The acting is god awful. The kid in it, the 11-year-old girl, I wanted her to die the whole film. It's like, I don't care who you are testifying against. You should never act in a film again. You're fucking annoying as shit. I hope you die. It goes on from there. They obviously have to defend the mall from these terrorists. Ben Kingsley should be ashamed of himself as an Oscar winner. He pretends to be the kid's dad at one stage. She runs away. She ends up in there. She faints and she's out cold. And he's like, oh, she ran away. She's my kid. And they half believe her. But of course, Antonio Banderas, he was a Marine, so he's too smart for this man. And he's like, no, I don't trust him. Ask him all these kind of questions. But Ben Kingsley's American accent is shockingly bad for a classically trained actor. And I actually watched something about Ben Kingsley. He was part of this the Royal Shakespeare Society back in the 80s. And it was like him and Ian McKellen and really famous actors. What's your man that played Poirot Butler? David Suchet is in it as well. And you can tell that he's this fabulous actor, but like, clearly they forgot to get a dialect coach for this wooden scene because it's terrible. And if I was a mall security guard, I'd be like, what's wrong with that man's voice? Clearly he's not her father. But it goes from there anyway. And there's these three security guards, they're all quite young lads. And they have a chance to get out. And the guy who's the head security guard, Johnny Bravo, he's like, you know what? I'm not in charge anymore. Let's listen to this guy. They had a chance to leave. They had a chance to go and not protect a little girl that they have no idea about or anything about. They have no training, no nothing. They have no guns. And they decide to stay and try and protect this little girl. And I'm going to ruin this film because don't ever watch it. They all die. All three of them die. They all get killed in the film. And the guy who's like the head of security, he has a gun in his car, but he's this kind of like obviously overly brash, overly kind of talky guy. He has a gun in his car and he thinks he's cool. Never handled a real, like, you know, never really shot a gun in his life. But all of a sudden in the film, he's taking out these highly trained mob guys. You know, he takes out about 15 of them before he's killed. And then there's a really nervous guy. He gets killed when he walks around the corner. The little girl gets out of the way. He gets shot. The other guy's killed by a sniper. And I'm like, these lads are probably below minimum wage. I'd be like, see ya. I'm gone at the back door. I don't care. Take the little girl. I'm gone. I don't care what you say, Antonio Banderas.
I'll take a bit of cash if you want me. If you want the girl, I'll give it
to her. You offer him like 1.5 million. I'm like, absolutely. She's annoying. And the little girl can't act for shit as well. And it's like, it tries to hit on this kind of like emotional side of like, my parents are dead. They're like, good Jesus. Oh, I can't stand you. I'm being very harsh on her, but my God, the acting is terrible. You said to me, Gogan, as well, you can tell it's extremely low budget. Like, there's this bad guy in it as well. He's like, it's so annoying. Like, he basically runs at the building and has like kind of like you know the things you use for like ice climbing, the like picks where you'd like put them into the wall, and that would take you like, you know, you have to like hammer in a spot with it and stuff. But he uses them and he runs up and jumps on a car and then uses them in the concrete to climb up over a building and get in, and then he gets beaten up by one of the security guards at one stage, but then he's still alive. And then there's a real Indiana Jones moment where he comes at Antonio Banderas with a knife and he just shoots him. I was like, what the fuck was the point in that? It's a horrible chip pan fire of a film. The guy who made it, it's his first English language film that he's ever made, and it really rings through. Dialogue's terrible.
Just looking at it, Ferg, it's a $15 million budget, which is actually very low. Says enough.
Yeah, I mean, when for what they were trying to do.
What childhood movie for you, or is this a reason? When did you come across this movie?
Netflix picked it up, and it was one of those ones. You know, when you're flicking through, it was like, "Oh, recently added," and I was like, "Oh, security, Antonio Banderas." And as Fergus had said before recording, it has a couple of points that I would be like, "Oh, this sounds all right." Then you start watching, you're like, "Oh, Jesus, the budget is there's no budget in this. There's a lot of."
Did you watch the whole film?
Oh yeah, of course.
Oh god, good god!
But like, I feel with these movies, once you get to a certain point, you have to watch it. You know, you have to watch the whole thing.
Like, it made no sense.
It's only an hour 28 minutes as well, so that's.
Yeah, I mean, it's only an hour and a half, which I appreciated. I was like, okay, it's a short enough film. Hmm. Like, the fact that the three lads die, I'm just like,
I was very surprised by that. I did not think they would.
But the fact that your man turns into this, like, I mean, like, they. What annoys me about certain films is that, like, sometimes they blur the line. It's like, either these are really highly trained people or they're bumbling idiots. Mm. They're not both. And at one stage, your man fucking hits this guy in the head from fucking miles away in, like, a hair fucking trigger, you know, slice of a door and shoots him in the head. Yet this guy who is a security guard with a taser takes out like 15 people before he's dead. I was like, and they're like, they're advancing on him shooting, and they're like, oh, dying. And I'm like, that's one guy getting shot at. He's behind a bunch of fridges. Get him.
If you were to give it a rating, fair, what would it be coming in at?
One. That's all I think of. It's coming straight to my head. One. I don't know if that's out of 10 or 100, but it's one.
It gets 33 on Rotten Tomatoes somehow, which is...
scandalous.
It is ridiculous compared to the Eddie Murphy movie that we rated earlier on.
I'd rather watch that. It was Daylight Robbery. Because I'll always watch a film if the action is, like, decent enough. But even the fight scenes were fucking shite.
Yeah, no, I completely agree.
They set a couch on fire as well at one stage and, like, push it off the top. And, like, your man, like, he's on fire and then they just kill him. It's just so much wrong with the film. I'd almost say watch it just if you're like in the mood for a laugh.
No, I agree. And I suppose, like, not rushing things along here, but Butler, what movie did you Butler, what movie did you get?
We've got 4 minutes.
You have two.
I got I was gifted Battlefield Earth. By Fergus. I couldn't even tell you where I want to start this. I mean, it's... it was borderline eye rape. Like, it was just one of the worst things I've ever watched. And it sailed into the top 10 worst movies I've ever seen. Awful, awful, awful movie. Here's the plot. In the year 3000, I feel like I'm starting a busted song, but in the year 3000, when humans suffer under the rule of Cyclops, a brutal race of aliens, Johnny Goodboy Tyler embarks on a journey to fight evil forces and end the atrocities. Basically, this is a semi-Scientology puff piece. It was John Travolta's passion project to make this movie based on one of L. Ron Hubbard's novels, The Founder of Scientology. Another fucking whack job. Like, anyone who founds a religion. And that's us sued by the Church of Scientology. Oh no, it took 6 episodes. look, this is famously one of the worst movies ever made. And I can see why. Like, it's the writing is awful, the acting is terrible, the costumes are shocking. John Travolta's walking around looking like a Rastafarian Bigfoot. The editing is terrible. The music is overly. It's just. And the guy who wrote it, I looked at it, his filmography, and he never worked again after this. And I was like, well, thank the good gods for that. But he actually came out in an interview and said, look, it wasn't the script I gave them. I don't know what happened between when I wrote it and then what came to the screen. It stars John Travolta, Lawrence Fishburne, Barry Pepper, and Kim Coates from Sons of Anarchy.
Did you just say Lawrence Fishburne?
Yeah.
Forrest Whitaker.
Oh god, don't Lawrence Fishburne.
Someone call Samuel Jackson quick.
Well, I'm sorry, it's hard in that fucking Wookiee costume he's wearing, but look, I apologize. But yeah, look, Barry Pepper is one of my favorite actors, and he's been the poor man is just, it was embarrassing to watch him run around that stupid wig. It's got so many just clangers, and like, it's John Travolta's like trying to be this angry alien, and he looks like a fool. You're a fool. And then like the critics, he did like a screening after this, and all the journalists were sitting there, and he goes, so did anybody like it? And nobody answered him. And he said in an interview, like, I felt down after that until I talked to Quentin Tarantino, and he said he really liked it. I felt like that was like, you know, when some kid comes in and with a fucking shit picture of a car from school, and they're like, do you like it, mom? And they're like, yeah, it's going right on the fridge. It's just like, I mean, you probably didn't want to break John Travolta's little heart, but it's just, if Quentin Tarantino liked this, then I instantly dislike every other Quentin Tarantino film because of this. So don't attach your wagon to this, Quentin, please. It's, I think John
Travolta... I thought it was a great film. That was mean, Quentin. I did get killed on Homer Simpson.
I think John Travolta suffers from like script blindness. I don't think he understands what a good movie is. And I think if he's in a good one, he stumbles upon it like a blind man looking for a nickel in the dead of night. Like, it's just like for every Pulp Fiction, there's like, you know, this.
No doubt.
It's the set design is awful, and the dialogue, and it's like, you know, Barry Pepper plays like there's these, like, the humans live in the wilderness and the aliens now run society, and the humans basically like have gone back to sort of like a hunter-gatherer phase of evolution, but they can still speak, and some have American accents, some have English accents, because, you know, why not? And you know, Barry Pepper's like, I doubt the gods are real. And he's, you know, he fucking whines about a dilapidated pitch and puck course, and he gets scared by a plastic dragon. He's like, oh, it's a dragon. I was like, well, he's a fucking idiot. But then John Travolta takes him to the Denver Public Library because he wants to be like, I'll show you how your human race was conquered in 9 minutes. And he brings him to the library. And Barry Pepper's there, and for about a few hours, he's there reading the fucking Declaration of Independence. And I was like, in all this time, being a hunter-gatherer, being scared of plastic dragons, he just seemed to develop an understanding of how to read, which I thought was, like, no fucking sense. And John Travolta planned this in two parts, and he wanted to make a sequel. And it was such a fucking box office bomb that they scrapped the sequel. So they only filmed half the novel. Like, the movie ends halfway through L. Ron Hubbard's novel. And it's just, God almighty. There was also the movie involved possible fraud. Apparently, the production was like inflating the budget to scam investors, which just sums it all up. Like, it's, I would never make anyone watch this. I'm just trying to find the right vocabulary to state how much this film felt like a rectal exam. It's just
I've never watched it, and I was like, I'm gonna use Butler as a guinea pig, because it's pegged as one of the biggest piles of shit that's ever been made, from the dialogue to the acting to how it was shot to everything. And you're right, like Barry Pepper, I think, was sold the dream, and he went into it and he was like, what is going on? What is this? And I think that they stole, I know they say it's based off an Elon Hubbard book, but it sounds like they stole the plot line from Planet of the Apes.
Pretty much, yeah. It's like, even like the alien, so he doesn't even look like an alien. As I said, he looks like this Rastafarian Bigfoot. They're about 12 feet tall. They've got these big hairy paws. They go to like bars and stuff, and they drink this green ooze. And he goes to like, he goes to Dramasaurus with Forrest Whitaker, and they're just drinking this green ooze. And John Travolta's just like, put it on my tab. And the barman's like, you don't have a tab here. He like, looks somewhere amazing. I do now. It's like, what is going on?
Yeah. Did you see the part at least? Because it's probably like, the reason I even knew what this film was, it was like, it was like a thing of like worst scenes from movies ever. And it had the thing where they send John Travolta back to Earth, and he's just like, we've decided to take you off the cycles. And he's like, thank the God. And like, the acting is terrible. Like, John Travolta's like, thank the gods, I have. And the way they speak so properly, it's so weird and off-putting. And he's like, I decided to put you on an extra 150 cycles with endless options to, what is it? It's like endless options to renew. And then it keeps playing over. It's like, with endless options to renew. With endless options to renew. And it plays over and over.
They do that before. I think like John Travolta laughs to like Barry Pepper, and you can just hear the laugh on the loop, like, ha, 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 ha.
Oh, man. It's and he really plays like the grand, like the kind of guy who sends John Travolta back to Earth. Like, he's actually a good actor as well. Like, I don't know what happened. Like, you talk about Forrest Whitaker compared to like The Color of Money.
When you watch it, you kind of feel like, is someone taking the piss? Like, it's just like some sort of like,
oh, it seemed like a joke.
You know, parts where it's like, it's so bad. It's like The Room. You're looking to, you're like, there's no way professional actors, directors, producers, editors, cinematographers thought this was good. It makes me passionate. Like, it makes me angry, because I'm like, I'll write about a Scientology puff piece if you want, John Travolta. I'll fucking make L. Ron Hubbard's fucking subscriptions go through the roof if you want. But like, this is just the biggest. Oh God, it's. If not for The Happening by M. Night Shyamalan, this is the worst movie I've ever seen.
Wow. I mean, it was. I think it was like John Travolta's love letter to L. Ron Hubbard.
His love letter to mental illness. That's what it was.
Which showed like hate mail, really.
So, Butler, what like score? Would you give it a score?
-50.
Which is totally understandable.
Whatever Tiger Woods won the fucking US Masters by in '97. -. Yeah, that's what it is.
No, I haven't seen it, but I agree.
I apologize to Lawrence Fishburne and Forrest Whitaker. It wasn't my fault. I was blinded by my hate. And
yeah, it's fair.
But yeah, we'll leave it on that, and we'll move on to our next segment. If anyone's been listening week to week, God bless you. And we're just really quickly going to talk about a couple of movies that we broke down trailers for, and that we just wanted to touch on real quick. So they've actually been released, and we've had a chance to talk about them. So just real quick, Fergus, you got a chance to watch The Little Things this week. What did you make of it?
I did, and I picked up as one of my trailers for a couple of weeks ago, and funny enough, Goldman decided to pick it as one of his picks for the draft, and it was the first film to come out of the draft. And I wasn't far off on what I rated. I think I was like 1% off from what I had actually decided what it might have been. I might have to go back, fact check me if you can.
Episodes to save tape.
yeah. No one listens to this podcast. I started it and I was like, this actually looks like a good film. And like you were saying, Butler, you were like, I want to watch it and see where maybe it went wrong. And it's really nicely shot. It's really like, the cinematography is really nice. It's really beautiful. It looks like an expensive film. you know, it's well acted, like, if, you know, solid performances from the three lads. It suffered in a lot of places. So I had mentioned it when I mentioned the trailer. Rami Malek gives a good performance, but he was horribly miscast as Jim Baxter. There's this scene where he's like getting Denzel Washington's car towed away because it's in the way of his car, and he's standing outside with a pair of sunglasses on, leaning against his car while the car gets towed away. And like, you're not that character, though, are you? You're not this cool leather jacket wearing, smoking, I don't give a shit type of cop. That's not you. No, you're a Sherlock. You're a person who is so massively intelligent that the weight of his intelligence is crushing him. You're not that. Yeah, you're a beautiful mind. You're not that type of character. You're just not. And it didn't work. Now, in parts, he gave good performances, but when it jumped back to that type of character, it was like, ugh, it just doesn't. It's not hitting home. And then the fact of the matter is, it got so convoluted, and it ended up with this massive twist at the end that was like, what was the point in the rest of the film for that? Like, the fact that you were going with that plot twist is annoying in a way. And I was angry at the film because I was like, oh, there's a good film in here. There's good performances. It's really nicely shot. But it's literally like, it's set in the 90s, but it's literally a 90s film, like Bone Collector, for example, which we enjoyed, Buller, but it's like a film from there that's like a 5 out of 10, except with a shit ton of money with it behind it, and that it was filmed today, and that's all it is. Like, one of the reviews, I said, I've seen this Denzel Washington film before, and you have. You've seen it thousands of times. I know he hasn't made thousands of films, but that's just the point I'm making. But, yeah. It deserves maybe a little bit more than it got. It got like a 45 or I think 48% on Tomatoes. I think it deserves a little more than that, but all over for its convoluted plot and its horrible miscasting of Rami Malek, who's a fabulous actor. Yeah, it deserves to go in the bin. It's a bad film.
No recommend to watch.
Do you know what? Maybe I said for Nicole to watch it because, as I said, it reminds me of a film that I would have watched on Wednesday night on TV3 or RTE, and I would have enjoyed. But I think the fact that it was trying to be not that, and it is that, it annoyed me. I would recommend for you to watch it because I'd love to hear your opinion on it. I'd love to see both of your kind of, like, yeah, where did it go wrong? Because I enjoyed maybe like the first half an hour of the film, and then it just starts to fall to shit. And you're like, no, this isn't good. And the fact that Jared Leto got and I apologize to Jared Leto fans and Jared Leto. Obviously, he deserved his Oscar, and he's a fabulous actor, but he's chosen the wrong things. He got a Golden Globe nomination because he's a seat filler. That's all he is for this Golden Globes. He's a seat filler. He's a position filler. He didn't do enough, and he's not in the film enough to deserve.
The lack of movies that got a chance to come out because of COVID. And like, yeah, it's kind of pissed me off, though, because One Night in Miami, you could have had the four lads in. Like, I know, I think Leslie Odom Jr. got nominated for, but I mean, any of the other ones could have got nominated as best foreign actor as well. So it seemed a bit shit.
Yeah, I think that he doesn't deserve his place there, and he probably knows it. He put a lot. He's a method actor, and he put a lot into it. And I'm not saying he acted badly in it. He was pretty good as the character, but where the character went and what his character was about was such bullshit that it doesn't make any sense. So there was no point in putting him in there. And he doesn't have enough lines and enough hard-hitting stuff to get nominated for an award. He shouldn't have. He's a seat filler. That's all he is, unfortunately.
Well, real quick, I got a chance to see News of the World this week. It's going to be available on Netflix this week. So by the time people listen, this will be well on Netflix. Well worth a watch. A modern Western starring Tom Hanks. He basically has to rescue this girl and kind of bring her across Texas, across like outlaws and harsh terrain to get her to safety. And his job is he goes town to town, he reads the news that's going on in the world to townsfolk and stuff. It starts off a bit slow, but it's great. It's real tense in times. There's an unbelievable standoff on this kind of rock cliff with Tom Hanks and these kind of, basically, these pedophiles who are trying to buy the girl off, and he says no, and they kind of pursue him out into the desert and they have this real tense standoff. It's real good. There's a lot of like good use of cinematography, sound. Tom Hanks, he does one of those classic, you know, I'm just the everyman and I'm against all this adversity, and real sweet and times, a bit gut-wrenching at the end. An hour and 58 minutes, which I think is a grand runtime for a Western, does everything it needs to do. Very steady movie, and I recommend everyone check it out. I was happy enough with it. Just give it 20 minutes to get going, and you'll be very happy with it. That's all I'll say, really.
When does the shootout, if I can just ask one question, when does the shootout happen?
About 42, 43 minutes into it.
That's not
I'll definitely like, Dogan, I think you agree. You like a good Western, like a good modern Western.
Yeah, but again, I think the runtime is a massive factor for me as well. You know, like that runtime is perfect. So I'll definitely be giving a watch. And it's on Netflix. When it comes out, it will be on Netflix. So that's just an easy way to watch
it. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, you just throw it on one night. I agree. I'll definitely give it a watch anyway.
Yeah.
So last evening, we'll move on to our picks for each other for the next episode. Who would like to go first?
I'll go.
Go on.
Sorry.
Go on. I said, go on, Butler.
You're picking for me, David, are you?
Yep. So I have two options for you. A or B. And that's all I'm going to say.
B. Oh, I was going to say B for Butler, but it could be A for Adam. B.
He's delighted.
I really wanted to get A, but
oh, damn.
So it was a choice. A was the good movie and B was the bad movie. So I am delighted you've got the bad movie, but I really wanted you to watch the good
movie. Probably a great movie.
Now it's a good movie for me. I don't know. Should I tell him what the good movie is?
No. Yeah. Reuse it and leave him in pain.
Okay. So I'm sorry about this. This is bad, and you're not going to enjoy this. This is not revenge, by the way, for There Will Be Blood, because I did, you know, that's I can't compare this movie to that. It's called It's called The Wrong Missy.
Oh God.
With David Spade.
Yeah.
Oh, Kira wants to watch that, so I'll just knock that out with her. That's grand.
Boy, next week.
Maybe.
Ooh. Oh, over Zoom.
Be an episode next week. We will see. It's her birthday, so we will see.
Oh, that's a valid point. That's a valid point. Look, I'll give you option A if you want. If you wanted to watch this with Kira, that's perfectly fine.
No, I don't want to watch it, but I could watch it with her. What was option A?
The A team.
I'll just go with the wrong Missy.
She was insulting. Yeah, that was backlash for not looking. There Will Be Blood.
Yeah, but I don't know why you're holding off on the A team so much, both the TV show and movie.
I'd rather watch the TV show.
The movie's fantastic, man.
The movie is good, but the TV show is way better, obviously.
Yeah. Look, what do you want, A or B?
I'll go with the wrong Missy. Unless I don't see Kira, then I'll watch the A team. So I'll let you know.
All right, that's fair. Should I give you a synopsis into, like, everyone knows what the A-Team is, so I don't feel like I should really give you a breakdown there.
Oh, yeah, The Wrong Missy, it's David Spade. He brings some girl to Hawaii or something who's a head wreck or something, isn't it?
Pretty much, man. Like, I'm not going to lie to you. This is a, like, Hannah was up a few nights ago, and she was like, can we watch The Wrong Missy? And I was like, oh, that sounds bad. Now, there was parts I was like laughing my head off, but it's just because I was like, this is just weirdly awkward. But
what year is it now?
This year, last year?
Last year, yeah. It's part of the what's Adam Sanders? Happy Madison. Part of that crew. So like, there's a load of them that pop back up. Rob Schneider, one or two others that you'd recognize from like The Waterboy and stuff. This was a tough watch. I don't know if you and Kira will like it. If you do, fair play. But it's not for me.
Fair enough. Curious, I'll move on to what I have for you. I have I have three categories for you. You can have war movie, drama movie, or horror movie.
Number two, my lord.
This is a tough one. In between two, give us war. Go on, give me the war movie.
You may have seen. Have you seen Apocalypse Now?
I actually haven't watched it yet. I haven't got around to watching it yet.
What? Yeah, I get slated for not seeing terror movies.
No. I completely agree. I haven't got around to watching it yet. It's one of those ones that's been forever on my list, and I'll happily take it because.
You're seeing it in school. I could have sworn one of the teachers showed us in school, or we watched it over the course of either history or English or something like that.
Dogan, you surely agree that's a maddeningly long movie.
I hate it. I'm not going to lie. No, but you're spot on. Way too long. And I was just like, you know what? No.
I think that's why I put it off so many times, because I was like, oh, when am I going to watch this film? This has forced me to watch it. It's something that I've been planning on watching. I've never got around to it. Like,
I think everyone should watch it, but look, we'll save it for next week. But like, there's obviously, it's a debatable one. I don't think it deserves the universal acclaim it gets, but it does have stuff.
That's another war.
Another
war movie that I don't like.
Synopsis.
I don't know who on Google, so off the top of my head, Martin Sheen plays like a captain. I think his name is Willard, Captain Willard, and he's basically tasked by a young Harrison Ford to go upriver in Vietnam to capture or kill this Colonel Kurtz, played by Marlon Brando, who's gone mad and started his own sort of mini militia in the heart of the Vietnamese jungle during the Vietnam War, obviously.
Look, I love
him. Starring Lawrence Fishburne.
Also starring first video.
There is a first one. No, it's Lawrence Fishburne.
Look, we second guessed yourself there. Yeah. I haven't seen the film, so I just found that in. I just figured out why Gogan doesn't like that film.
No, it's not that.
Because Harrison Ford is in it.
No, I thought you were going to say Lawrence Fishburne, but no.
Wrong with Harrison Fishburne. As you may have noticed, a continuing trend, Gogan doesn't like Harrison Ford.
No, that's not true.
It is true. Also, you made a comment earlier on about a TV show, and me and Butler were talking about this, and your love for the lesser sequel,
I know where you're going with this.
Yeah, I know you know what I'm talking about, but you mentioned something earlier on, and I was like, that's the worst version of something. And I was saving it for later on, but I completely forgot what it was.
Well, I'm very happy you forgot what it was.
Yeah, I forgot what it was, and I was like, that's David Goggin again.
What is that movie that we're talking about? It's the Jack Ryan one, isn't it?
No, you love U.S. Marshals instead of The Fugitive.
It is the better movie.
It's not the better film. I like The Fugitive, Gogan. Or sorry, I like U.S. Marshals, but The Fugitive is the better film.
Nah.
It's your bias against...
It's not my bias!
Like, and I'm going to fucking... get you cut out every clip where Gogan doesn't like a Harrison Ford film, and I'll prove my point.
And I'll make it very easy for it to be very little.
Well, you're up next, Gogan.
Oh, fuck. Is it two Harrison Ford movies?
It's all Harrison Ford, no. But now I know, actually, I'm going to make your next pick all Harrison Ford.
Because I like Harrison Ford movies. I've seen them all as well.
And you also said to me, it's your least favorite Jack Ryan film as well, with Harrison Ford.
Well, that's true.
Exactly! There's a bias there, Buller, and you know it.
Oh, well, actually, hang on. Is that the one that he's in it with Willem Dafoe? Or there's a few ones he's Jack Ryan in.
Yeah, Clear and Present Danger and is the one with Willem Dafoe.
That's a great movie.
It is a great film. But you love Willem Dafoe.
See, that's why.
That's why I love that film. Okay, so I'm going to give you a number between 1 and 3. You might have seen one of these.
Bit more of a breakdown there. Any genres given?
No.
Is there a war movie?
I'm just going to give you a number. Just give me numbers. 1 and 3.
Give me 2, please.
2. I don't know if you've seen this, right? I'm not going to name the film. I'll give you the description and see if you get where it is. A research chemist comes under personal and professional attack when he decides to appear in a 60 Minutes expose on Big Tobacco. No?
No. It sounds like a movie I've recently watched with Mark Ruffalo, but it's not that. No,
it's the 1999 biography drama thriller The Insider, starring Russell Crowe and Al Pacino.
No, I've been kind of... I've definitely seen this before pop up in a suggestion tab, and I was like, nope, pass. So
also starring the late great Christopher Plummer. Mm-hmm. So I think it's a great film.
It's very good. Yeah.
Buller, do you like the film The Insider?
Yeah, you recommended me about 3 years ago, and I watched it. I thought it was great.
Yeah, Gogan, great film.
I like Russell Crowe, like
Al Pacino as well.
Yeah. We'll see.
I think you'll like it. It's a true story.
What's the runtime on it, Ferg? Do we have a runtime?
2 hours 37.
Oh, for fuck. Like, what thing is doing to me on these movies?
You have ADD. Like, I mean, is it that hard to go over 1 hour and 40 minutes?
If you get it wrong, it is.
Whoa.
And there will be blood.
I just want to highlight
that. There will be too much runtime, is what they should call it.
Insider, 5 stars. Apocalypse Now, 5 stars. And I get the wrong Missy. It's a conspiracy. And each and every one is in
it. Like, I'll tell you exactly, Gogan. Like, is in, like, The Insider has, I think, it's a 7.8 on IMDb and 96% on Rotten Tomatoes. It's a great film. And it's a true story. So I love one that you can kind of, like, it's actually, when you watch the film, you're like, Jesus, that's mad. And you can go back to the real story about it. It's basically a guy who speaks out against the tobacco industry.
To be honest, I actually might enjoy it now because, as I was saying, I only watched one recently there with Mark Ruffalo in it. It was based off the, I can't remember the name of it.
Something like Deep Waters or something?
Oh, yeah. And it's, in fairness, it was good. Went on a bit too long. So, look. I'll
easily
get to stick up with it.
But I agree with Paul. What's your issue with films that are this long? Because, like,
sometimes they can just be too long.
No, I understand that, but at the same time, if it's a good enough film, you know, most films these days are
used to go on for an extra 30 minutes.
But most films these days are over 2 hours. I give you a prime example: Security, 1.5 hours, a load of bollocks.
Gets the job done, in and out.
Thank you, everyone, for listening. Hope everyone enjoyed. We'll be back next week with more trailers, an actor of the week, and we'll get the reviews of the runtime on The Insider, the runtime on Apocalypse Now, and the runtime on The Wrong Missy. So join us next week for more fun. Thank you for listening.
Thanks, guys.
Some folks say that Willie Green was the baddest motherfucker the world ever seen. But I want you to hold on to your feet. Hold on to them tight.